My guest Harvey Shapiro edited the new anthology Poets of World War II. He writes, 400,000 Americans died in World War II. This is not a book of celebration, unless it is to celebrate man's ability, indeed his compulsion, to turn terror into art. Most of the poets represented in the book served in the military during the war. They include Stanley Kunitz, Kenneth Koch, Lincoln Kirsten, Lewis Simpson, and Richard Wilbur. Editor Harvey Shapiro was a radio gunner during the war and was decorated for his service. He's a former editor of the New York Times Book Review and the author of several collections of poetry. Harvey Shapiro, welcome to Fresh Air. Let me start by asking you to read a poem by Howard Nemiroff called The War in the Air. Would you say a few words about the poem and about Nemiroff before you read it?
Sure. Nemiroff volunteered to serve as a pilot in the RAF before he was actually transferred to the United States Army Air Force. And his poems, a lot of his poems grow out of his experiences flying out of England over the North Sea for the RAF. This is the War in the Air. The title of the poem is, it's significant because the Second World War, I think, was marked by aerial warfare. Just the way images of trench warfare dominate the way you think of what happened in World War One, smoking the burning cities and the fleets of bombers, I think dominate the imagery of the Second World War. One of the interesting things about aerial warfare, from the point of view of those who took part of it, and took part in it, and I was one of those, is that, you know, the dead didn't come back. I mean, you had breakfast in the morning with a group of guys who were flying next to, you know, a plane next to you in formation in your squadron, and they didn't come home that night. They didn't come back from the mission. They simply, as M. Nemiroff said, they stayed out there in the clean war. The war in the air. So this is the way he talks about it. For a saving grace, we didn't see our dead, who rarely bothered coming home to die, but simply stayed away out there in the clean war, the war in the air. Seldom the ghosts came back bearing their tales of hitting the earth, the incompressible sea, but stayed up there in the relative wind, shades fading in the mind, who had no graves, but only epitaphs, where never so many spoke, for never so few. Per ardua, said the partisans of Mars, per aspera, to the stars. That was the good war. The war we won as if there were no death, for goodness sake. With the help of the losers we left out there, in the air, in the empty air. The Latin in that Nemiroff uses, per ardua, per aspera, through adversity to the stars, was the motto of the Royal Air Force.
Right, okay. Well, thank you for reading that poem. You know, in commenting about the poets and the poems represented in your World War II anthology, you say that the poetry in this book is very bawdy, bitchy, irreverent, and a lot of the poets of World War II don't glory in brotherhood, and they don't find nobility in one another. Quite the contrary, they often dislike one another or dislike being put cheek by jowl alongside one another. Can you talk a little bit about that kind of tone that you found in these poems and why you think that's true?
People were snatched from a life into a situation that seemed bizarre and somewhat unreal to them. I mean, there's a kind of arc that goes from the poetry of the Second World War up through the poetry and through the writing and the memoirs of, say, the Vietnam War. There's a kind of ratcheting up of that surreal quality. But what happens in the Second World War is that people are caught in this giant machine. They can't hold it in their head. They come from all different parts of the country. And they're unlike the poets of World War I, who were kind of officers. They were all mostly officers who came out of a kind of gentleman's club. These men, some of these were farm boys, you know, working class, Ivy League, as I was. They don't have a lot in common with each other. They kind of, each of them is fighting his own individual war. And they all comment, and a lot of the poets comment on that directly.
There's a poem that I want you to read that I think, you know, is about the difference between those two worlds. It's called Survival Infantry. It's written by George Oppen, who served in the 103rd Infantry Division in Europe, and he was wounded by shellfire in 1945. He left the country for most of the 50s because he had been a communist, and I think the FBI was interested in talking with him. But then he came back and ended up winning a Pulitzer Prize in 1968. Do you want to read this poem?
Fine. Survival Infantry. And the world changed. They had been trees and people, sidewalks and roads. There were fish in the sea. Where did all the rocks come from? And the smell of explosives, iron standing in mud. We crawled everywhere on the ground without seeing the earth again. We were ashamed of our half-life and our misery. We saw that everything had died. And the letters came. People who addressed us through our lives, they left us gasping and in tears, in the same mud, in the terrible ground.
Now, you fought in World War II. Were you drafted? Did you enlist?
Well, I enlisted. I was in the enlisted reserve. I would have been drafted. It was just another way of entering the service. And I went through aerial gunnery school in Yuma, Arizona, and then I went to radio operating school in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Then after my phase training, my training with the squadron and learning how to fly and fight in formation, I was put into B-17s, flew as an instructor in the States for a while with other radio gunners, and then went overseas, as I did volunteer to go overseas, and I was in the 15th Air Force, flying out of Foggia, Italy, over Germany and Austria. I flew 35 missions.
Well, I'd like to ask you to read one of your World War II poems, and this is a poem that's included in your anthology, Poets of World War II. It's a long poem, so I'll ask you to read an excerpt of it. And why don't you introduce it for us?
I wrote an early poem, Battle Report. This is the first poem I was pleased with when I wrote that in the 50s when I came out of the war. But then, as I got older, there were stories that I hadn't told that I wanted to tell, and they keep coming up. And these war stories are two stories that I wanted to tell, and I couldn't get them down until only recently. First begins in Foggia, Italy, where I was stationed. These are a conquered people, said the British sergeant, putting his hand on my shoulder at the bar in Foggia, Italy. This is 1944. He was instructing me on why I should not tip the Italian barmaid as I was doing. A conquered people. I liked the phrase because it had the ring of history, suggested dynasty policy. Put the British Empire with the Roman down the long reach of time. But in the real world, it made no sense. How did it apply to the Italian kids who came to my tent each morning to trade eggs for cigarettes? Or to the old Italian lady in town who was teaching me the language. Or to the girl in the Air Force rest camp on Capri I fell in love with Christmas week. They were hardly a people, much less conquered. They were living as I lived, on the bare edge of existence, hoping to survive the interminable war. But high above their cities, on my way to Germany to kill the enemy, I was part of that sergeant's fictive world, part of the bloody story of our century. We were approaching Berlin at 23,000 feet, our usual altitude for bombing. P-38s, looking like flying catamarans, had accompanied us most of the way. Little friend from Italy. Now nearing the target, we had P-51s. We knew that when their auxiliary fuel tanks were jettisoned from their underbellies and came floating down like silver baubles, a sky full of them, enemy fighters would shortly show. A clear blue light flooded my cabin. Through my window and hatch, I could see what looked like miles of flying fortresses, the big-assed birds in their tight formations, blue all around them, followed by white contrails. Later, colored traces would connect bomber to enemy fighter, and then the black flak would spread in the sky, a deadly fungus. Planes would blossom into flame in that bewildering sky. How to believe all that happened, as in a movie, a TV drama, or some other life?
So when you look back on your experiences in the war, does it feel removed like a movie or a TV drama, or do you feel like this is something that has really shaped you and has never left you?
Both. I'm 79 now. I was 19 or 20 then. It was another life. It was somebody else who had these experiences. But they resonate in me still. Every once in a while, I can touch them and feel them quite vividly, quite palpably.
What do you find yourself thinking about the most watching the war in Iraq?
I think about what the guy's going through. I think about the fact that a lot of them are the age I was when I was going through this, when I had this experience. The technology's so different that it... that some of what I see is quite foreign to me, but the faces of the men and the men and women that I see are not foreign to me, and I feel very close to them.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Harvey Shapiro edited the new anthology, Poets of World War II.